Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Neely. Every week, our show focus on the intersection of technology, media, and business with influencers and change makers around the globe. You are a vital part of this program, as you know. Please send in your questions to the program via Twitter, Facebook, my blog, or email. Welcome to do that at any time during the show. I'll be checking those. And today, Friday, June 17th, 2011, we have a special treat. Dr. Paul Turek, the premier leader in the area of men's health, as well as an active blogger, which you don't often see, is here to discuss efforts for Men's Health Week, which concludes in a couple of days, June 19th. Welcome to the program, Dr. Turek.
Why, thank you, Jennifer.
I'm so pleased that you could make the time to join us. I know you're busy traveling all over the place, helping people. And this week you actually had a talk that kind of hit the radar in terms of social media. You were at Google this week talking about men's health and in your area of expertise. Maybe you can explain how your area of expertise landed you at Google talking about men's health overall.
Yeah, I'd love to. So this is a special week. It's called Men's Health Week. It's actually part of Men's Health Month, but there isn't all that much activity nationally, which is kind of a statement about men's health, which needs to change. And that's one of the reasons I'm here with you, is I want to make sure people realize that it really does matter. And it ends on Father's Day, so that's a good one. And so I think Google Health has a series, and they have lecturers come in to try to improve the quality of life of their employees, which is a quality of life that's not bad to begin with.
Yeah.
And they asked me to give a talk about men's sexual health. And I'm a men's health specialist in San Francisco, and I'm a surgeon urologist, but I also do I take care of young men, basically. And a lot of the problems that young men have in this world are sexual health issues. They may not be problems, they may be issues. And they may be normal, and they just don't think they are, whatever. And so I kind of addressed 8 of those sexual health issues in an hour talk, and I thought it was pretty well received. I mean, the campus is impressive, and the questions were great, and I think it got sent to 11 sites, 10 or 11 sites across the country at Google. So I think that's the segment of population that I think takes the least good care of themselves, men at Google, because they are immortal, and and so to teach them a little bit about life. And the basic theme of the talk was that you think sexual health is kind of an elemental orb or rotating around the realm of overall health, but it's actually an integral part of overall health in young men. And many of the issues, sexual health issues that men have, erectile dysfunction, sex drive issues, infertility, etc., can come back to reflect on overall health.
Mm. And I think one of the things that's interesting about Men's Health Week is earlier in the week when I was looking around, my radar on Men's Health Week was that not too much was happening. A lot of the questions were being answered by people helping one another out. And later in the week, Men's Health Magazine came out with a coronary quiz. Are you a candidate for coronary problems? And so it seems like a lot of people are taking the quiz. And I know that part of what you talk about is how, to put it bluntly, the penis is a predictor in a lot of ways of heart problems and other problems. And I should let you speak to that. You're the doctor. But can you talk a little bit about that? Because it seems like today people are really talking about coronary problems as they relate to men's health.
Absolutely. I think, you use the word first, so I'm feeling comfortable saying that word now, but the P word. But
the penis word, yeah.
Yes, the penis word. There you go. Okay. Oh, you hear shush go through. But basically, erections are a biomarker, a natural biomarker of heart disease. And that's been kind of drilled into the literature over the past 10 years. Because if you have problems with erections are driven by blood vessels, and the heart is a big blood vessel, and the penis is essentially a blood vessel, although it's glorified. The issue is that the penis has blood vessels in it that are smaller than the heart by about half. So if you have a, if you're someone who's going to get heart disease, it's probably going to show up in the penis first because it's a smaller system, and it'll clog quicker in a sense. And that's true. I mean, basically, if you have serious erection problems in your 40s, you're twice as likely to die from heart disease as someone who doesn't. And that risk is the same as having a family history of heart disease, a brother, a father, a mother, or having being a smoker. So, and those are considered serious risks.
Yeah, and I know smoking is one of the things that in the Men's Health Week Twitter chatter that's going on, you know, smoking is being talked a lot about quite a bit in terms of how it factors into health problems. I'm curious your take on smoking in terms of, you know, more some of the specialty areas that you are very well known for, which, you know, have to do with fertility, infertility, and that sort of thing.
I'm rabid about it. I mean, I think that if you're trying to conceive and you're smoking, you know, that's just an example of not taking very great care of yourself. And I think, you know, I look at them and I say, do you really want to be smoking around your newborn kid? Do you really want to have the stench of smoke around your kid? And I'm not even talking about the erections later on or the lung cancer, stuff like that. But, you know, how trendy are you? You know, how trendy do you want? What's the cost of being trendy and smoking? But I have a great solution for it. There's a guy named the Mad Russian in Boston. It's called Puff Daddy. And I have a handout of his, and I've called him. And he does hypnosis. And young men love this because they don't want to take long treatment regimens that are expensive, like the gums and the patches and things that provide nicotine without the smoke. They just tend to fail that. It's a compliance issue. You can't do that. Men want something simple, cut to the chase, get it done. So I've sent a bunch of couples there from my practice. And I think he's a hypnotist, but and he does just focus on smoking, but he's about $65. And you go to Beacon Street somewhere in a basement, and you sit with 20 people, and he doesn't touch you, and you close your eyes, and 20 minutes later, you never feel like smoking again. And it's what it is addiction control. And it's kind of weird, because I'm a scientist, and I'm an evidence-based guy and an evidence-based doctor, but this is impressive. It's called the Mad Russian. And he's been in, you know, Glam magazines and on Yelp. You could read about them, but it works. I've sent half a dozen couples last year, and they call me and say, Turek, still not smoking. You know, they'll email me or Twitter me or something. So it's really fun. But that's the kind of solution that works the best, which is addiction control. And I think a guy like the Mad Russian could do anything well, like weight control or anything, but it's really a matter of addiction control. So I do emphasize to men who I really want them to stop smoking for infertility or erections or anything, any sexual health issue, it's on the chart as a problem. You know, it's on the map as one of the causes for almost any one of the 8 issues I talked about at Google. But I'd say the most important thing is make sure you don't just pull the plug on smoking with a young guy and give him something or let something take the hit. You know, so if it's sort of something that has to, it can't just be pulled. It's too much of a stressor. So you would say, all right, you know, you can gain 5 pounds instead, or you can eat some sweets, or you can, you know, you can do something else. You can exercise rapidly. Do something else to take on the stress that the smoking cessation will bring on when you stop it. So, you know, it's a biological organism, and it's in balance, and you have to, if you're going to change the balance, you have to have something to help out.
Yeah, it's sort of like that risk analysis, you know, if you're going to
right.
do a matrix of risk analysis.
Something's going to give, right. Something's going to give. And you just accept that something's going to give, and you help them with it, because they won't survive if they won't be able to do it if you don't have a you know, a plan.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the key things about what you talked about at Google, which was, you know, that you have a very good sense that there is a plan men can follow. That gets them to a place that is healthy. So, you know, I think that's one of the things in terms of Men's Health Week is it's sort of like, where do you start? What are the most important issues? You see a lot of women, I notice a lot of women on Twitter, you know, sort of reaching out about fertility and infertility issues, which often have to do with their partner rather than themselves. There's just so many areas. And so, you know, having a program that addresses overall health, does it really move the needle for these other areas where, you know, we're talking about, you know, things that are very, very near and dear to people's hearts, which are, you know, being able to have a child and that sort of thing?
I think that we need to deal with men entirely differently, especially young men, entirely differently than women. And I think, you know, for instance, there's no monthly biology in a man, right? I mean, one of the best biomarkers on earth is the female ovulatory cycle. So women notice, you know, it's been regular for 10 years and then all of a sudden there's 3 months of something odd. You can bet they're going to call their doctor. It's like a clock. I mean, it's just a great sign. And it's just great, but men don't have that. And so we have to find those things. And I think, for instance, that the semen analysis, and I'm telling the government this when I go consult with NIH and things, that maybe we should consider the semen analysis as a baseline study in your 20s or 30s. If it's abnormal, you know, we know that that is a general reflector of overall health. Maybe there's things we need to tend to, in addition to infertility or fertility. So I think that men are different beasts, and we have to treat them differently than women. The other thing is, you know, men judge their productivity and their self-esteem by, no, they judge their self-esteem by their productivity. So the amount of money they make, how hard they work, the firm they work for, what they do in life, it's very much a part. They're hunter-gatherers. They're the ones who sent out, get the food for the family. I mean, we weren't cavemen too long ago, and that's the mentality, which is provide. I understand myself best as a provider. And so if you say to a provider like that, where he's a caveman or a Googler, you basically say, here, why don't you come to my office? Why don't you take a two-hour drive, you know, up the peninsula and deal with traffic and come in my office for 13 minutes or whatever insurance covers now for a visit, and then drive 2 hours back to let me tell you something that you maybe didn't want to hear or is not that constructive or whatever. It's just, it doesn't work for men. I mean, they just don't, you know. So in my practice, I see them once for an hour, and I listen. That's the other thing we don't do with men, because they don't talk much. We don't listen to their bodies. They don't listen to their bodies, and we don't listen to them. And 12-minute visits just don't cut it for men. They don't, because they don't know what's going on, and it takes me a while to even get men relaxed enough in the office to be able to open the book to find out what the real symptoms are. Because they may come in with symptom A, and that is kind of the tip of the iceberg of a symptom B, which is caused by C. And if you solve C, B goes away and A goes away. But men don't know it's C. They don't even know it's B. You know, women are already on C already.
Yeah, and I think, you know, speaking from experience, unfortunately, I think if semen analysis was done in the 20s or whatever, and as people get married later in life, knowing what you're dealing with, I guess, is everything, you know, and it would be nice to know. You know,
I think from a fertility point of view.
Before I married my husband, you know, and all the time I took to choose him and all that, I said, you know, I'd love you to have a sperm test. And it would have been too difficult for my husband and his personality type to get that done. But I would have learned so much more in the journey that we've ended up going on together. We wouldn't have.
Sure.
It would have decreased stress level.
That's a two-edged sword if you're saying, you know, I'm measuring you by your semen. There are religions that are with arranged marriages around the world, not usually in America, but I have lots of patients who come in and say, you know, the Orthodox Church told me to get a semen analysis before this arranged marriage, and it's abnormal, and now I can't marry her because it's abnormal, because I can't have a kid. And I get called into court a lot for this kind of thing. And, my answer is I'll say this in a letter, you know, the semen analysis does not a man make. I mean, you're not really infertile until you're trying, and you're certainly not infertile if you have any sperm count. Don't assume that at all. In fact, assume the opposite. And you're only really infertile if you're sterile, if you're zero, if the sperm count's zero. And he wasn't. So, you know, we did some things, and we made him better, and now his sperm count's normal. I said, don't check it again. You know, just take great care of yourself and go on with your happy life, you know. But, you know, so it can go both ways that way. You know, that's odd. And also the standards for what makes a semen analysis normal are also changing. There's 5 editions of the World Health Organization standards for semen analysis, and I just gave a talk at our national meetings in urology in Washington last month on the 5th edition. And my argument was, you know, basically, is this a tempest in a teapot? You know, is this a storm in a very small space that doesn't affect anything by changing these numbers around and stuff? Because they don't really mean, you know, they don't really mean a lot unless they're really zero. So it's a two-edged sword, but, you know, and we have to think about how best to use it and who might get it. But, you know, there are other biomarkers, like erectile dysfunction is a biomarker. I think if you're, you know, if your sex drive is changing or low and it's not what it used to be, that could be a real biomarker of health. For instance, if your body's ill, think of the caveman. If your body's ill, the last thing you want to do is reproduce. You want to survive first. If you're stressed by a woolly mammoth as a caveman chasing you, the last thing you want is an erection and a sex drive. If your woolly mammoth is financial, if it's, you know, the recession or the dot-com bust or your mortgage or whatever as a provider, that's just the same as a woolly mammoth chasing you. And that's the wrong nervous system, you know, to relax and enjoy life and have a great sex life.
Interesting. But there's things that men can do, too, and should be doing, you know, sort of like women do the breast health check. I just noticed somebody was talking about an event where on Twitter where there was a stall for men to be able to, quote, check your balls for Men's Health
That's
Week.
That's interesting.
And everybody, apparently testicles are still taboo. Some men went to every other stall at the Men's Health Week event yet ignored our stall. And so the hashtag is check your balls. And, you know, certainly, you know, that's another one of those taboo areas that men don't have to do. Women, you know, I don't even enjoy doing, you know, sort of the stuff that we're supposed to do as women and check our breasts, but it's a similar type of thing that men could be doing proactively to help themselves. Is that right?
It's remarkable. I mean, it's remarkable how well you take care of your teeth compared to your testicles. But I'm stunned weekly in my practice by patients. A couple of weeks ago comes in, infertile, married, infertile, and he has no testicles in his scrotum. He's 35. This is not unusual. Now, how many people miss that over 35 years? So, yeah, you're right. It's cultural, and it's there, and that, you know, another fact. Man has a problem down there. It hurts, or you feel something unusual. And then you ask, well, how long does it take that person typically to get to care, to figure out what that problem is? Could be anything. Could be cancer. Most times it's not. It's a cyst or something. But I did a paper on this because I said, a guy notices a third testicle or a lump on his testicle, and it's called a spermatocele. It's a cyst. It means nothing. I mean, it can be removed and all that, but it's benign. But I wrote a paper about guys in my practice, and I said, how long did it take them to get care when they knew they had something abnormal, unquestionably abnormal to them? And it was about 4 months before they saw care. And testis cancer confirms that. The data is 4 to 6 months before they seek care. That's, you know, that's the difference between confined disease that's curable and metastatic disease that may not be in a lot of cancers, especially testis cancer. So, you know, monthly testicular self-examinations are a no-brainer. End of the shower, hanging low, just comb them and make sure they're smooth and make sure their consistency is the same from side to side, that they feel the same. And if there's a change, call a doctor. Call me, 415-392-3200. Call me, and I'll see you the next day. And, you know, and
yeah,
you
I mean, well, and you do 10 minutes on the phone, too, for free. So
oh, sure.
It's like, you know.
But, you know, that kind of thing probably needs a check to say. And most guys find a scrotal pearl or their epididymis.
Worried, you know, the thing is that you've got a world-class doctor, and we haven't even talked about all of your credentials because you're so, knowing you, you're so damn modest. But you know, I think was the phrase, I mean, you've seen sultans, you've seen heads of state, you've seen major leaders in the Silicon Valley, and there's, you know, without naming names, which you've not done with me either, but you've, you know, as I've known you, you've, you know, you've seen all of these amazing people, and the problems are the same. You know, it's sort of
yeah.
like, you know, it doesn't, just because you're a sultan doesn't make you, doesn't exalt you into anything, it doesn't.
No, I don't think you get better care. I don't think you get better care with political status or financial status. In fact, I see a lot of concierge doctors who charge a lot of money turning patients into victims. And, you know, and the whole, my whole life is about owning your care, ownership. Take some responsibility. You know, women have an ovulatory cycle. They take a little more responsibility. One way to take responsibility as a man with your own care is to get married or have a partner as a woman, because she'll take better care of you than you will.
Oh,
another way is to realize you take better care of your car than you do your body, and to start taking as good a care of your car as your body as you do of your car. You get your oil changed every 6 months, maybe, and you don't see a doctor for years. In fact, one of the most impressive things about Google wasn't the campus. It was the question I put to them about how many of you guys get your oil changed in your car regularly, and everyone raised their hand. And then I think maybe you told me afterwards that Google does it, or it has something on site. The second, so that impressed me, but not that much. The second question was, how many of you have been to the doctor as regularly as you change your oil or in the last year? And half the audience raised their hand, and I was really impressed, because that is usually a one percenter for 30-year-olds. I mean, it really is. So that is really proactive care. I mean, that is great. And I'm just hoping that those doctors do things like examine them down there. You know, everyone's all shy about it, but...
Well, I thought it was interesting, you know, the obviously don't want to talk about, you know, I had the great fortune to be there, so I don't want to call anything out that anybody from Google said, but certainly it was something that you thought a lot about before you did the presentation, which is, you know, talking about libido, sex drive. It's something that you don't hear a lot of doctors, you know, having gone through this with my husband. You know, it's something that you don't hear a lot of doctors talk about. What advice could or did you give to the folks at Google, and would you give to men in general?
I think I have a blog on it called The Science of Libido.
You have a fantastic blog. I mean, one of the reasons that we had to have you on the show was there's two areas where you are great with the sort of technology that my listeners love, which is blogging and social media in general. And your blog really is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here's what you do if this is the issue, and you do it in a really fun, engaging way. And then the sort of other area is, you know, making things that feel like they're huge, big problems, making them less panicky, so making them sort of like, here's the program that you follow and here's what you do. So it's a little bit less daunting.
It's digestible.
Yeah, because that, I mean, I know that freaks people out, but I mean, you do a lot of, on the other end, you, and one of the things I wanted to ask you about was Clinic by the Bay is a free clinic that a number of doctors contribute to. You're one of those doctors in San Francisco where people can get health care. And I'm wondering if there was anything during Men's Health Week or any or if it's just part of ongoing care in terms of your role there and helping people that don't get care at all if it wasn't for things like Clinic by the Bay.
Yeah, you know, it's true. I mean, Jennifer, I was a highly decorated professor at the University of California, San Francisco for 15 years and writing hundreds of papers and getting grants and teaching. But you know, you can get caught up in all that, and you can feel like you're it. And I just thought, this is not healthy, because although I was surfing all over the world and giving lectures, you know, you're never home. You're working all the time, and it's all glory. And I think you do a lot of that for yourself. And I have a family who's saying, yeah, so where are you, Dad? You know, where are you? How come you're not home? You know, and I just said, do I want to live like this? It was a stressor for me, and I just said, so I literally threw the hat in and said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right and do it right. I've been preaching about men's health, getting grants about it, writing papers about it, but I really wanted to do it because I love patients, and I really wanted to live the dream that I was proposing. And that's what my practice is. It's a man cave. And, you know, it's one of those places that you come in and you see cars and you see car magazines and you see a surfboard and you say, you know, this guy's got a personality. This doctor has a personality.
And on the television, which, you know.
Yeah, and you can walk outside and take a phone call and there's Wi-Fi and the chairs are like your living room and it looks like a living room. It doesn't even look like a doctor's office. And the guys come in and that helps. You know why? Because their blood pressure is lower when the nurse takes it. And then they actually aren't as nervous. Men can be very nervous in the doctor's office. And I don't want to spend 15 minutes trying to figure out to start the conversation. So if, you know, they come in and they sit down and they're a little more relaxed and they say, these guys have hardly ever been to a doctor. I mean, I've had patients come in for vasectomies that have never been to a doctor and they have three kids and their blood pressure's through the roof. And I'll sit down with them and say, I know what you're here for. And, I'm willing to do it, but not today. And the reason why is because your blood pressure is stroke level. And so what I want to do right now is I promise you I'll do this if you see this doctor tomorrow or you go to this hospital today. And I'll literally make the appointment for them and make sure they arrive there and have the nurse follow up and have it all go. So I'll do a tit for tat on that one. But, I mean, that's what you're dealing with. These are different. This is different than women. And
right, and it's nice that you have that bargaining structure kind of in place because I know you probably get, I mean, at least in, like I said, in my personal experience, you get a better compliance rate.
Yeah, and the other thing for a men's practice is just expect them to be 10 minutes late. You know, I mean, you should have street parking because guys love to street park. So I have street parking in San Francisco. And they come in 20 minutes late, including the billionaire club, and say, I did it. I say, you did what? You're 20 minutes late. He said, no, I got street parking. You know, there's three lots around the office, but the street parking, they did it. They got a spot, you know, and I think that's kind of funny.
It is. It's great street parking, too.
You know, men are different. They're different, and they don't, you know, you got to finish on time. They've got appointments. They don't schedule very well. You know, they're not multitasking as well. And they forget things. My office is full of women. I love it because their intuition's great, and they'll call me, like today, to come up and say, "Listen, call this guy." I say, "Why? I'm busy." "No, just call this guy," and I'll call him, and I'll find out there's something brewing up there that the women can figure out, but the men can't. And I'll catch the problem before he realizes it's a problem.
Amazing.
So it's a whole different philosophy about. But if you want to do it right. And the other thing I use a e-service called HealthLoop.com. And HealthLoop and I'm an advisor to it, so that's my disclosure. But it's a new startup in San Francisco by Dr. Schlein. And it's kind of neat because what I realized in operating on men and doing microsurgery and vasectomy reversals and things is that, and a lot of them from out of town, is that they don't ever call you. You know, call me if there's a problem. They never call. Never. And so I know there may be problems. So this service is great because we set it up so that they get an email and it gets them to a website, which is HIPAA secure, so it's secure for patients. And then I have a pain scale, a swelling scale, a Twitter box, and a place to put pictures. And I notify them once a day and I can follow them. It's like a house call. And all of a sudden, this whole world opens up. And they're so talkative, and, you know, I did this today, you think this is okay, and they feel so much more confident about their healing because they're able to just sit at home and type into a computer and know that they're getting care. So it's really, it's ownership. They're getting ownership of their care, which is the big point here, is that men don't have ownership, nor does medicine in general have ownership of men's health issues, which is why this week is so fragmented. Because endocrinologists do one thing, and internists do one thing, and family practitioners do one thing, and ER docs do one thing, and urologists do one thing, and I'm trying to be the general contractor for these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I had shared the story with you about my grandfather. You know, even in older age, you know, non-reproductive age men, you know, having had, you know, a high reading on his urine test, and so, you know, needed to check out prostate issues, and he also had heart problems, and he had a doctor that was ready to go and do massive heart surgery for a second time, and we found out by, I said, wait, we need to find out what's going on with the prostate, because, you know, God forbid that's something really awful. And it turned out that he had prostate cancer. It had metastasized to the bone.
So it was a worse problem than the heart disease.
It was much worse. Mm-hmm. But because that had been the ongoing problem, more or less, than the prostate, my grandfather was ready to go with what that doctor said. So it took a lot of convincing, especially with his generation, to say, you know, I'm your granddaughter, but I'm, you know, it logically, we need to know what the whole picture is. And I think what you're saying is, you're trying very much to look at the whole picture.
Sure.
And instead of just sort of siloing these problems, which can be so frustrating.
Yeah, I think the philosophy of care of men is different. Like, you don't see men getting angry. Like, this is a great case. Women with breast cancer have to be consented or have to be told about the option of having their breasts removed and a replacement artificial implant put in at the same time. That's one of the options, so they don't miss a beat, sort of. It's a devastating disease, and it's nice to have that option that you can at least look relatively normal right away. There's nothing like that for testis cancer. There wasn't even an implant on the market. It was pulled from the market. And no one said a word until one patient of mine found out, he eventually became my patient, found out that you can get neuticles, you can get implants for dogs that are castrated or neutered, and put those in at the vet so they look better or whatever. And he said, unbelievable, you can get them for dogs. And he got really angry to see the testis cancer survivors about 10 years ago, maybe more, and came in and went to the press and got a urologist to get the neuticles, and was going to put a neuticle in it. He was going to get a doctor to put a neuticle in him because he wanted them, and he was just embarrassed that he couldn't get anything. And the FDA found out about it and called the guy up, said, you do this, you're going to shut you down, and because they weren't FDA approved and et cetera. And so that caused a big roar. The guy went to the press, and I get a call because I'm actually at that point heading a study to put a new testis implant on the market in America. Actually, the only one that's on the market that's FDA approved right now. And I was the marketing head of the study that put it on the market, wrote the paper. And I helped design it and the whole thing, and it was, you know, studying autoimmune disease and cancer and all that stuff. Anyway, a guy called me up. He said, what? You know, I said, listen, I said, calm down. I said, we're working on it. You know, we have to do it a certain way right now because it's not the old way anymore. FDA wants to know it's safe, and there's all these issues with breast implants in the 90s and 2000s. So, and then I looked at, and I went to the press, and I said, listen, you guys, don't ignore this. This is how men work. I mean, you really sort of have to take care of them a little bit because it's kind of a little too little too late reactionary sort of thing, but there's a need here, and men don't really bring it up. They don't really, unless it hurts or it's going to kill them, they don't bring it up. And we have to work with that. That is not new.
So this is interesting because in the introduction to your show on the web, I said that, you know, you talked about your involvement with the creation of the artificial testicle. And if you recall, I don't know if you follow Wired magazine very much, but there were basically breasts on the cover of, very carefully placed breasts on the cover of Wired magazine in November 2010. And I sort of challenged Wired, put that on your cover, because it created this huge uproar. They had a woman on staff that quit because there were, and it was really about this regenerative tissue technology. Mm. And, you know, sort of, it was a bigger picture, but I actually thought it was really clever because I thought, you know, a lot of people are going to read this. And so my thought was, you know, kind of in saying that, you know, if Wired had a clever way to put, you know, something related to men in that, in their package area, on their cover, maybe people would read the story about the need, and it would be easier to get funding for it and get it through the process. Where is that in the process?
So there are two kinds of artificial testicles. One is the one I just talked about, which is an implant, and then the artificial testicle you're referring to is a way to make sperm in a dish. So the classic user of this technology would be a childhood leukemia survivor, of which there are 55,000 a year, who were sterilized by the treatment they received for a horrific disease and never had an opportunity to bank sperm or do something proactive about it because they were kids. And so there's really no opportunity for their fertility. I have developed something called mapping, just now 15 years old, which is a way to map out sperm production in testicles in a non-surgical way in an hour under local anesthesia, which has been pretty good. And I'm actually giving a talk on that at our American Society Reproductive meeting in Orlando in October. It's kind of the big experience. And I just put a pretty good paper out in the American Journal of the Asian Journal of Andrology last month, a review on the whole technology. But basically, it's a way of finding small pockets of a few sperm in the testicles that happen to survive the onslaught of chemotherapy. And we've got some incredible cases of bone marrow transplant survivors. Bone marrow transplants are the absolute last resort for cancer treatment, where you recur and you recur, and then you end up getting irradiated. You knock out all your bone marrow, and then you put new bone marrow in from someone else. And you basically replace your whole bone marrow DNA with someone else's. And it's beautiful curative stuff, but it's a big whack because the system has to be able to accept it. So I have fathers from that after that. And, you know, the number of reported pregnancies you could count on one finger in the world on that. And so we have these mapping patients who come in and they get sperm retrievals, and then we use fancy technology called in vitro fertilization or test tube technology and get it, which is relatively routine for other reasons. But to get these guys to be fathers is really heartwarming. And but there's still a lot of them that doesn't work for. And that's bugs me for years. And I think it's not that I'm missing sperm with mapping. I think it does a great job. I think that it's not there. And if you don't have a stem cell in there, it's going to be hard to make a sperm. So I have been working on this for about 4 or 5 years and finally have the consummate group of scientists surrounding me that we can get this done, including a stem cell biologist and a Sertoli cell biologist and a stromal cell biologist and myself. And we've been wanting for funding. The government doesn't believe we can do it and keeps rejecting these NIH grants, but it's possible. Basically, the idea would be to either take the stem cell from a testicle, which you have a lot of experience with, and I've published a bit on, and turned it into a sperm outside the body, or take a embryonic stem cell, which is kind of voodoo because it comes from embryos, and embryos are politically charged little cells, and try to push it to a sperm in a dish, because embryonic stem cells are supposed to be able to do anything, or take the newest thing, which is an adult stem cell, which is like a skin cell, and take that and turn it into a embryonic stem cell by transforming it with certain genes, which is a very hot topic, and then pushing that to sperm in a dish. And so we actually have a clinical trial right now, and my patients who are sterile, who maps don't show sperm, are candidates. If they have a Y chromosome deletion. So if the reason they're sterile is because they have a genetic problem on their Y chromosome and they're missing a gene and that results in that, and that's it. I mean, you're basically a normal guy and you're missing this gene, it's one little gene, and you're sterile. And that's hard to fix. So we are biopsying their skin and we're turning their skin into adult stem cells, which we can do now. And we've done it on almost everybody. And then we're going to try to push that cell to a sperm in a dish. And Renee Ray O'Para at Stanford, who was working with me, she's just great, great, great work she's done. She has shown that you can take an embryonic stem cell and get it most of the way to a sperm, and you can take a testicular stem cell and probably get it most of the way too. But we're having trouble finishing it because it takes 13 steps to go from a testicular stem cell to a sperm with a tail. And clinically, we need the sperm with the tail. We have tried using stage 11, stage 12 before without the tail, and it really has not been successful, and it's gone off the market about 10 years ago. It's voodoo. You really want a cell that's got everything complete, genetically and epigenetically capable, and we're not sure those earlier forms are. So what we can do is we can get to some of the earlier forms, but they're not ready to be used clinically. And so we're actually creating an artificial bioreactor, which is going to be essentially a testicle with all the cells in the testicle in a device, and try to put the cells in there and run them all the way to the end. And I think you need everything. Doing it in a dish is not, you know, sunlight. You don't need sunlight. You need everything that the cells of the testicle supply each other, because there's a lot of cell-cell interaction. So it's like building a brain, sort of. It's not easy to do, but I think I have the critical mass of minds, and I think the government's not interested, even though a paper came out in Nature, the best science journal in the world, about a month and a half ago. It's on my blog. I think it's called Mice in a Dish. There's a post on it.
It is, yeah.
Mice sperm in a dish or something like that. And it was, you know, they did it in mice with an organ culture system, but they did take the original cell was a mouse testicle cell from a newborn mouse, and they turned it into a sperm in a dish, an organ culture, same sort of thing. They built an organ around it, and then that sperm was used with technology to have another generation of mice, and the generation resulting from that went on to mate normally and have kids, F2s, kids of their own, you know, pups of their own. So this is just, you know, it's not revolutionary science. This is just a matter of hard work and getting all the details right and getting it done.
So,
and the other application we see for this, the other application is new drug development. I mean, why spend $1 million studying mice and beagles for your cosmetics or your new drug for pulmonary hypertension or high blood pressure when, you know, looking for reproductive side effects when animal models might not have anything to do with the human condition? And why not get a human bioassay that will be cheaper, much more green, and much more relevant going? So we want, you know, to have an assay for the FDA to use and say, okay, the 600 or 800 new drug applications coming out every year, if you want, you can go to the animal route, you can spend $1 million, your company, you can go to, you know, use this TURIC artificial reproductive toxicology model, human relevant bioassay, you know, not disposable, so sort of green, clean, and do it that way and get more relevant data. So those are the goals of that artificial testicle, and it's exciting. I mean, it's just, I don't know, maybe I would retire after that, just because I've that would be a holy grail for me.
So what's preventing it from actually, money?
Yeah, it's money.
So in the Silicon Valley, where people are investing in knowing about influence and all these other things, why wouldn't a VC or someone else prominent invest in making babies, allowing people that otherwise wouldn't be able to?
Hard to know. I mean, this market is incredibly price insensitive. So if you're a VC and you want to invest in something, if you're doing something in medicine besides sort of robotics, I mean, this is the ultimate market, because I can't tell you how much a patient would pay if you could tell them I could make a genetic sperm for you in a dish that's usable.
Otherwise, you would be thought of as sterile, right? This is a sterile.
No, there'd be no other opportunity. Yeah, no other.
Right.
And I could tell. I mean, I could tell you how many people in the Middle East would do it, because they're not doing donor sperm and alternatives, non biological alternatives for children.
Right.
They
don't want biological children.
It's not what they want. So, you know, I have patients calling me every 6 months. But yeah, no. But no one's offered to pay for it, and we need about $1.5 million in 3 years, and for a lot of reasons, you know, it's too early for venture. Angels, you know, it's too risky for angels. So you don't.
Oh, I don't know. I'll be interested when this show goes around, because it seems like this is exactly the kind of thing that would yield a high return, but it's early, so there's a lot of risk factors. But
yeah, there's a lot of risk in time, too. I mean, there's no product. But the short-term product is this reproductive toxicology model, and we're going to work, as soon as we get some money, we're going to work with the FDA and say, listen, we want to develop this with you so that you will say, do this or this. And then, you know, there's your moneymaker. And then the ultimate product, which may not make the money but will be for the good of civilization, is to be able to offer an opportunity to make sperm for those guys who just absolutely had no opportunity to have a kid.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, it's interesting thinking about this because there's such a need. And is this the future of medicine? You know, is the future of medicine really
having...
It's
about as personalized as you could get, yeah.
You know, having to go out to the VC community potentially and actually solicit their funds for something that will probably yield them a zillion times their investment, you know, when you look at the worldwide need.
The worldwide need is a big one, yeah. And, you know, California, we have a $1 million grant now with the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine to do some of this testicular stem cell work. So my practice in Stanford and a couple of other co-investigators on this grant, it's been great. California is, you know, it's one of the few places on Earth that can get done because that was a great investment, Prop 61, I think, in 2003 when Schwarzenegger started. When we put $3 billion into that prop, that was fabulous for California medicine. I mean, I gave a talk at the Getty Mansion. We have a salon series there on this, and I just said, you know, thank you for voting for this. I know pediatric hospitals were also on the bill. Pediatric hospitals always get money, but this one started a whole other revolution in science. There are 14 institutes, stem cell institutes in California right now. Those are brick-and-mortar buildings and inside full of scientists. I recruited for Stanford or for UCSF when I was there. I was visiting Korea when that guy came out who cloned humans. Hushuk Wang cloned humans in Korea, published a paper in Science. I went to see him as a part of a meeting, a men's meeting, a health meeting. I was in Seoul giving a talk, and I just called him up, and I said, can I tour your lab? I've never, you know, no one's ever met anyone. He's cloned 10 humans, and he was working on it for spinal cord injury patients. Very James Bond-like Korean guy, very well-spoken, very handsome. He was the darling of South Korea. I mean, politically,
wow.
He was funded for nothing. He had bodyguards. He was, you know, Hank Aaron. Maybe not Barry Bonds, maybe Hank Aaron. And that guy, maybe it was Barry Bonds.
Well, Barry Bonds had some help, so.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. So this guy,
maybe
anyway,
that's
so
a good
he's
analogy.
Got this lab. He's doing pig stuff. He wants to make a human-compatible pig kidney for kidney transplants for adults, for patients. So he's trying to make a cross-kidney-human, cross-pig-human kidney. That will be accepted by humans but made in pigs. That's what
wow.
He was working on, which is a gorgeous idea to supply the need for transplants. So, you know, you start with the kidney. Anyway.
So we have Dr. Kirk, I need to interrupt you for 1 second. We have a caller on the line
sure.
that I want to welcome in. Who do we have on the line?
Hi, this is Rita, and I'm listening. I don't have internet access. I'm just going to be on my phone.
Did you have a question about fertility or anything else related to the topic here?
Just listening because I have a partner that's low sperm count, and so I was...
I think I lost her.
Yeah, so that's a common question, you know.
What do you do about a low sperm count?
Yeah, what do you do about a low sperm
count?
So
I can answer that, Rita. So I'd say... When I see a low sperm count, I think of what is this guy doing poisoning himself? What's poisoning this man? Or sometimes those are genetic because your stem cell allotment in the testicle is low and it could be a genetic issue. So you think about environmental exposures. I would think about things like smoking, toxins, any social, recreational drugs, excessive use of those things, medications, what diseases do you have, what surgeries have you had, and then wet heat exposure, hot tubs, jacuzzi, saunas, smoking, tobacco, things like that, and lifestyle issues, stressors. So this is a stress issue. So if you're stressed by something, your testosterone level will fall. If your testosterone level falls, your sperm production will fall. The plant doesn't get enough water. Okay. And then if it's none of those things, It could be something on physical exam, one testicle, unattended testicle, varicocele, cancer, testis cancer, things like that. And if it's none of those things on physical, and then you could probably invoke genetics for a lot of it and check for that, and there's a couple of genetic tests you can do.
So the basic thing is, for a listener that's got a partner, and, you know, because I was one of those women, and, you know, I was lucky enough to be in the area and find you, but you help people all over the world. You can call
sure.
into the office and get 10 minutes free counsel.
And that's simply...
Whether you need to come in,
right,
or
it's not
whether...
going to solve the problem, but it will understand whether it's a good fit, whether you should be getting care, first of all, and maybe care with me. I just do it as a public service, basically.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that's what's the magic about it, is that, you know, you're a world-class doctor, but, you know, for someone like our caller here, you know, her significant other, you know, she could have him get on the phone with her on the other extension and just,
call right in,
You know, theturkclinic.com and
there's a site where you can put your issue and, you know, if you want to call or not.
And you are great with email and those sorts of things too. So I think that's, you know, that's something that I would, you know, think about the things that Dr. Turk just mentioned, you know, are they smoking? What are the things that they're doing to their body? Are they eating well? Are they, what is the stress level like? That sort of thing. And then, you know, if none of those things are helping with the issue, then, it's time to get a consult and think about it.
Yeah, and I would say the place to start with a guy is not a gynecologist. Because typically the woman goes in and she gets checked out to the tune of thousands of dollars, and then they go for another year, and then the guy gets a semen analysis and there's a problem there. And so, you know, I've been banging this drum for a while, but basically the guy should see a specialist as soon as the woman does. There's no reason not to. It's about half the time it's a male issue. So
this is very personal, but I should tell people that the reason that I know who Dr. Turek is because my OBGYN was checking me out, and I asked my husband and sort of had to beg and plead a little bit, but he did it once I convinced him it wasn't going to hurt to have a semen analysis done. So we had the results when I went in for my exam, and I've been seeing my doctor forever, so she knows my very long-term history, and she's going, everything's fine. I'm not sure what's going on. And the last thing was she picked up the fax off the machine and came back in, and she goes, wait, everything's changed. She wrote your name down on her pad, and she said, this is your prescription. He needs to see Dr. Turk. We're lucky he's in the San Francisco Bay Area. You get people from all over the globe.
Oh, yeah, we get international patients weekly, yeah. So I want to finish my stem cell story. So this famous stem cell scientist crashed, so he forged his data. We found out a year later. But in the meantime, when I was visiting his lab and very impressed with what he had done, we recruited to UCSF and now Stanford one of the postdocs who had cloned people, and that's how powerful California medicine is. I mean, the whole world would like to come here, except for maybe China, which does it on its own. But so that's the end of that story. I just wanted to finish it because it was just an exciting little guy like me plucking scientists around the world to come to California because it's a fertile place for stem cell science.
So this is, again, this is the example of the guy that cloned the sheep, right?
Yeah.
And
Dolly,
it came full circle. So is he now at Stanford?
You know, I don't know that. I don't know where he is.
But he ended up with
me in California. His name is Wilmot. I don't know where he went. Maybe Wisconsin. I don't know.
Because of the cheese, right? It's fascinating the experiences that you've had. I mean, just being able to have an audience with the Gettys, who are so powerful in terms of political contribution, and, you know, they can actually move the needle on a lot of things.
And the other thing I wanted to say was this clinic by the Bay. You know, I'm one of those guys. I was taught in college to give back, and so as a part of your life, you know, it's all, whether I was in academics or not, I always find myself giving back in big ways, and because, like I tell people, a lot of my patients, are not happy with the economy and they work in the internet industry, or they're retired in their 30s, and they say, I'm leaving. I'm going to Hong Kong. It's cheaper. I'll get fewer taxes taken out. I'll lose my citizenship if I stay 10 years, but I'm out. It's like, but I stop them and I close the door and I look at them and I say, but we raised you. I mean, this takes a village to raise someone like you to be successful. And you did it in this environment. Why would you not want to stay and give back to it? I just asked them. And so the Clinic by the Bay is a big give back for me because it's a free primary care clinic for the working uninsured in San Francisco. So it is a bright, light, modern space in which doctors see patients in my model, which is an hour visit, but it's free, mine isn't, but an hour visit, and get free care, and their families, if they qualify. And you have to be working in San Francisco and uninsured, so immigrants can do it. And there's now, we're going by zip code, but it's been a fabulous, and all the grants I wrote in science are now grants for this to go. We have McKesson funding, UCSF funding, we have Walgreens, Cisco. We have $750,000 worth of grants, and we've been open for about 6 months, and it's just booming. Retired doctors come in and donate 4 hours of their time who know what to do, and there's electronic medical records. It's just incredible. And the response by the city with Healthy San Francisco has been great. And I'm one of the founders of the, you know, one of the founding board members, and also I chair the advisory committee. So I'm the guy responsible for recruiting doctors, and we've been working on it for 5 years and just launched about 9 months ago. It's called Clinic by the Bay, www.clinicbythebay.org, and you'll see a great video on a landing page of the opening in November when Dianne Feinstein opened it and said, you guys have raised so much money. I've never seen something like this. But it's just been, you know, it's just been a great feed. And if you watch the video, you'll see my attitude is I've been to Africa and I volunteered in places and all over the world. And I think it's a real kick to be a doctor and give back and fix a cleft palate or, you know, help someone in another country of something. But you're really not making a big dent. You know, you're really doing it for yourself. You are helping people, but not the most efficient way. And I like the idea of, and I find it very, you know, thrilling to do. And I feel good about myself, but it's also a little bit of a, you know, I went to Africa and helped people. I really like the concept of giving back in your own backyard. And I like the concept of giving back in your own community because, you know, I was thinking, why did I go there? I could have gone to Appalachia and probably done more good than Africa. Mm-hmm. And now I think giving back in my backyard every day in San Francisco is delightful. It's like a shot in the arm every day.
And there's a Clinic by the Bay Facebook page. Hopefully there will be soon a Clinic by the Bay Facebook cause so people can donate money.
Yeah, we need $5, $10. I mean, we just need a little. There's about, you know, it's just opening. It's great. And you feel part of a community.
Yeah, mailing list. And I'm sure, you know, the volunteers there are just fantastic because it's volunteers in San Francisco.
We have Vista volunteers there.
Yeah.
Yep, we have Vista. Cool. And we have, you know, we're going to probably be getting students from UCSF in. We're intimately connected. My biggest thrill from this is one of my heroes from UCSF was a neurosurgeon named Charlie Wilson. Charlie Wilson is in his 80s now. And I never met him there. I was in the parking lot at 6 a.m. parking near him. He had a spot. Like at UCSF, only Nobel Prize winners get a spot or chairs of departments or very big people. And I would scramble for a spot as an assistant professor. But this guy had his own spot. And he had an old Jaguar. He parked there. And I'd get there when he did sometimes, and I'd just try to run and catch him, but he ran so fast, I never talked to him. And he's just one of the shakers and the movers. There was a New Yorker article about him and Tiger Woods and Wayne Gretzky about how you get that good as a neurosurgeon. And, you know, he's a brain surgeon, right? So he retires. I'm giving a talk about the Clinic by the Bay to the San Francisco Medical Society. He comes up to me and he says, I'm in. He didn't know who I was. He said, I'm in.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, he knew who it was from the speech. And I was like, and right now, Charlie Wilson, emeritus professor at UCSF, is my right-hand man. And he comes to my clinic for my advisory board meetings, and he pipes in, and I'm honored. I'm honored to be in the room with him. And he's a buddy. And I take him to the car after in the rain, and I put him in his car, and he drives off, and he writes me a note and says, thank you for helping me with my car. And, I, you know, it's just life is amazing. What you get out of the simplest things. But, you know, every word he says is something I would write down.
That's so cool. And I as much as Clinic by the Bay is the most amazing thing, the other thing people out there probably will want to know about is, again, the if they're not in the San Francisco Bay Area, that there are, you know, doctors and resources that are trying to help. So I think, you know, getting in touch, you know, maybe writing on the Facebook wall or getting in touch with Clinic by the Bay to see if there's a resource in your area is not a bad idea.
Yeah, and there are Clinic by the Bays all over the country. They're called Volunteers in Medicine Clinics, and there's 87 of them in the country. So this is the only urban one, so that's why it's kind of been watched closely.
Yeah, and also San Francisco, I think, just in general, having a lot of initiatives around this, it's been a big deal. So, you know, as we conclude here, I wanted you to be able to talk about one thing, you know, in terms of the empowering that you've talked about, and that is your connection to the Lance Armstrong Foundation, you know, the sort of guy that's the poster child for everything that you should do right, you know, in terms of, you know, taking care of yourself, being, you know, internationally known and huge superstar around the globe for the Tour de France and everything. And you know, he had, because of testicular cancer, had issues with having children and that sort of thing. And now you sit on the board of the nonprofit that is behind it all, and I would just love you to weigh in on your experience with that and kind of how you got connected with it, because I think it's a great example of how everyone is touched by
I think that
issues.
You know, Lance is like Viagra for the country. Lance did as much for men's health as Viagra did. So Viagra was the first pill for erections, and, you know, guys are storming in to see doctors, but while they're there, you get everything done, right? You examine their prostate, go over everything else, and you get them in the door. So it's like it's the wild animal thing. You get them in once, you try to do as much as you can while they're there and not hurt them. And Lance did a similar thing in terms of awareness, public awareness. I mean, you couldn't develop a campaign better than Lance of a guy who came in with metastatic testis cancer because he didn't, you know, he actually got diagnosed a little late and had it in his brain. And then he went through chemotherapy, and then he wins, I don't know how many tours he won after, but most of them he won after his chemotherapy. I mean, talk about ability. And so, you know, and then starting a billion-dollar nonprofit, and I have a Lance Armstrong Foundation grant for some of my early science in this area back at UCSF. I mean, he was funding, we weren't even doing testis cancer, I don't think. We were doing sort of infertility genetics and stuff, and he funded that. And then I got involved with Fertile Hope, which is now under the Lance Armstrong auspices, and I'm on their board, so I do a lot of the fertility. So they have fertility, Lance Armstrong's website, you know, Lance Armstrong Foundation has fertility calculators and stuff so that if you have cancer, you can go online and a woman or a man and look at these complex calculators of, you know, what kind of chemo, what kind of cancer, did you get radiation, did you get this, get that, and then it tells you what your options are. And it's great. Is it before you start or after you start? And we spent hours poring over these things for accuracy, but they're great reproductive calculators and things like that. And I just, you know, I'm a big fan of Lance, and I like giving back. He has a quarterly magazine that just started coming out about a year ago, and I was in the first edition of it for mapping. We did a nice layout on a cancer survivor who has kids, and it was a good story. So I was very honored to be in their inaugural edition of the Lance Armstrong Quarterly. The LAF Quarterly, I think it's called.
That's amazing. I think, you know, it's a wonderful connection that you have, and you have a connection to lots of different things, textbooks that, you know, in terms of men's health, that men are in training or women in training in this area are learning and shaping their minds. And I thank you so much for spending the time with us. We've
Absolutely.
Actually gone over time talking all about everything, and I feel like there's so much more we could talk about. But I'm glad we had a chance to talk about Men's Health Week and, you know, your contribution to it and the discussion that you had at Google.
Jennifer, I want to thank you for bringing this to light because it is an ignored area of medicine. Men are underserved. It's complex. It's their it's everyone's fault, but men are underserved, and this is exactly what we need, public awareness needed, like Lance, like this, to bring to light, to just improve the hell out of care that we give men.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Paul Turk. We'll let you go and get on with your very busy day.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jennifer.
All right.
Bye now.
And again, that was Dr. Paul Turk, who leads, he's the director of the Turk Clinic in San Francisco, but in addition, lectures all over the world, gives keynote lectures all over the place, and authors, you know, some of, or co-authors some of the textbooks that lead the area of men's health. And because it's an underserved area, and I've had, you know, experience, and I've met Dr. Turek from my own husband's issues in this area, I just think it's something that we can't shine enough light on. So this is one of my sort of bleeding heart episodes of the A-List, and I hope all of you, or some of you at least, have gotten some good information about this. Please spread this around. It's incredibly shareable. You know, if we get lots of questions, please send them my way, and I'm happy to filter them to Dr. Turek, and I'll have a blog post on this that you can contribute to as well. So I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning into this very special edition of the A-List with me, Jennifer Neely. We hope you enjoyed the program, and if so, we'd love it if you'd be so kind as to friend us or add us to your favorites here on Blog Talk Radio, or if you're over on iTunes, subscribe and rate us. We can never have enough ratings to know how we're doing, and we always want to be doing better. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show, archives, and free informational webcasts at jenniferneely.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a wonderful weekend.